Greetings, y bienvenidos a toda mi gente escuchando en Washington and all points beyond. This is Oscar Fernandez, and you're listening to the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM in occupied Washington, El Distrito Colombia, here on this Friday, December 12, 2025. We're also heard on latinomediacollective.com. You can find us on Twitter under the name at LMC underscore show, and of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez, and today on the show, we put the spotlight on both Honduras and Venezuela as a case study to the hypocrisy of the quote-unquote war on drugs and how the Monroe Doctrine of U.S. imperialism in Latin America and the Caribbean has ramped up to new levels of criminality. And so joining us on the show today is Egberto Willis, who's the host of Politics Done Right, which airs on Pacifica Station KPFT in Houston, Texas. Welcome back to the show, Egberto Willis.
It is my honor to be with you as usual, Oscar.
Absolutely. And also joining us is Arturo Dominguez, who's a freelance writer based in Houston, Texas. Welcome back to the show, Arturo Dominguez.
Man, I appreciate it. Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. So let's begin by putting aside the legal jargon and ambiguity of the U.S. drone strikes on boats off the coast of Venezuela with the following. This escalation of military tension towards Venezuela has nothing to do with drugs and everything to do with oil. Oil has been the main motive behind U.S. hostilities towards Venezuela for the last 27 years. Oil is the same motive that led to the same playbook that led the U.S. to invade Iraq in 2003. Oil is the main motive for these sort of military actions and crimes, no matter which political party is in power. So it's oil all day and all night, 24/7. And you don't have to take my word for it. Here is a clip from Representative Maria Elvira Salazar telling Fox Business last month, basically the quiet parts out loud. So let's take a listen.
Oh, I think Maduro is not Fidel Castro. Maduro is not a brave boy. So now that he has understood that he is on that very nefarious list of the terrorist organization, that the airspace above Venezuela has been closed off and the commercial airlines from the United States are not flying, he's understanding that we're about to go in. He understands that he is, he has been our enemy for the last 25 years. Mm-hmm. Venezuela, for those Americans who do not understand why we need to go in, for three reasons. You're in Fox Business. Venezuela, for the American oil companies, will be a field day because it will be more than $1 trillion in economic activity. American companies can go in and fix all the oil pipe, the whole oil rigs, and everything that has to do with the Venezuelan petroleum companies, or anything that has to do with oil and the derivatives. Number two, Venezuela has been the launching pad, the hub for our enemies, the Iranian, Hezbollah, Hamas, the Cubans, the Nicaraguans, people that hate the United States. And the only thing they want to do is do harm to us and to our young Americans. And number three, he is the head of the Sons Cartel, which is one of the transnational criminal organizations. In 2020, Nicolas Maduro was indicted by a federal grand jury for drug trafficking, and he is the head of the Sons Cartel. So right there, the economy, security, and politically speaking, we're going to be doing a favor to us, to our children, to our economy, to our oil companies, to be able to liberate, and to the Venezuelans, that they do want to be free.
So that was Florida Representative Maria Elvira Salazar sort of, again, saying the quiet parts out loud, which is that this is about oil, incoherence in between that, and ends the response with more about oil. So Arturo Dominguez, I mentioned at the beginning here, the same playbook that led to the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003. Are we repeating that same playbook? Because, I mean, there was a little bit more sophistication back in the day that led to the U.S. invasion of Iraq. But listening to things like that, it's like sophistication is all gone. Not even an ambiguity. It's all out there in the open. That this is all about oil, be all and end all.
I had to notice that, and I'm sure y'all did too, that the Venezuelans were the very last thing she mentioned. And she mentioned that with barely a breath left, right? So obviously Venezuelans are not the priority here. But no, this is the same thing as Iraq. You know, it's false narratives. It's, you know, putting people on TV to repeat the false narratives over and over again. And, you know, with stuff like the Monroe Doctrine, which essentially gives us dominion, well, perceived dominion over Latin America, you know, the United States, all they have to do is create false narratives, convince the public, and it's war. We've talked with Egberto extensively about Panama, right? Same thing. Create false narratives, you know, get the public support, war. And if you kill several thousand people, you know, that doesn't matter to any of these folks. You know, the clip was honestly, I believe, was a little bit of a psychological warfare. Because once she said, we're going in any minute, within about an hour, there were three bombers that left the Midwest here in the U.S. and went straight toward Venezuela. And then they traveled back and forth on the coast between, you know, of Venezuela, Colombia, Guyana, and stuff like that for several hours. And then they just left. And I think that this was part of a little bit of psychological warfare. A lot of what we're seeing right now is psychological warfare. And I often wonder if they thought if they put 25% of the U.S. Navy in the Caribbean, if Nicolas Maduro was going to run, if he was going to hide, if he was going to step down. And I hate to say it, but, you know, he has more support in the country than people believe. And at the moment, Donald Trump has done nothing but unite Venezuela around him to defend the country from imperialism, because no matter how much Venezuelans hate their government or country or whatever, or the leader, they celebrate their independence as much as we do, if not more so. They just celebrated their, what, 218th Independence Day from Spain, the Bolivarian Revolution. People don't understand that that means a lot in Venezuela. And the U.S. represents going back to what life was like before the Bolivarian Revolution. Overall, Venezuelans in the country are not very supportive of what the United States is trying to do. And that's my assessment from, you know, the extensive reporting, talking to Venezuelans, you know, across social media in the country. You know, I have readers that are in Venezuela, and this is what they're telling me, you know. And you look at how many people have joined the military in Venezuela and just since all this started, and it's pretty obvious that Venezuelans are not supportive of what the U.S. is trying to do right now.
Egberto Willis, based on what we heard, I want to get your response as well as the issue of whether or not we're repeating the same playbook that we saw in Iraq back in 2003.
Yeah, I agree with Arturo. It's the same playbook, but let me tell you what's disconcerting to me. You would think Americans are getting more sophisticated, so each time you would think that the message would be more sophisticated. The fact that she wants you to believe that Venezuela has anything to do with Iran, Hezbollah, and all these other terrorists, why would any American believe that these guys would be over here in Venezuela doing anything? I mean, the logistics simply makes no sense. And I think that we have to understand this. The gall of a country to think that they are the ones who will control your airspace. When they come and they say, we're shutting down your airspace, that the gall that they have to decide what kind of government should be in Venezuela. Being from Panama and watching the same thing for decades from my inception, it's hard to see the same thing occur over and over again. And in Venezuela, what we're looking at specifically is that they cannot accept that a socialist country would be sitting on top of the largest bank of oil, the largest pool of oil in the world. And the problem is that if that regime was ever made successful, starting from Chavez, they could not make that regime successful because Americans themselves would start asking, wait a minute, all that oil in Colorado, all that oil in New Mexico, all that oil in Texas shouldn't belong to a few. We should look at a country who says the natural resources belong to us all. We cannot have that. And a lot of people don't see the ideological fight that's really going on here. It's very ideological. We cannot have a country with that much riches be controlled by anything but capitalism.
And thank you for mentioning Hugo Chavez, because we should clarify that Nicolas Maduro has been president since 2013, not 25 years like Ms.
Salazar said. Well, it's a regime.
Exactly. And so if the parallels between Venezuela today and Iraq in 2003 wasn't bad enough, here is Representative Maria Elvira Salazar again distorting history of the U.S. invasion of another Latin American country. So let's take a listen.
I don't think they're going to, because last year, we, the Venezuelans under Maria Corina Machado and the opposition forces, they held elections, presidential elections. And those elections reflected and they showed that 80% of the Venezuelans, including the military, voted against the Maduro regime. So we know, we have information that maybe the top echelon of the military forces in Venezuela may be with Maduro, and they're going to flee with him. But the middle and lower ranks are with the opposition. We're talking about that this is going to be very similar to Panama. That I was there. I was a news reporter. And I remember when the Marines were walking in and the Panamanians' girls were asking them to marry them.
Yeah.
I think it's very similar.
Yes, exactly. So, okay. So obviously there's a distortion of history there from a supposedly former news reporter in Maria Elvira Salazar, which is a sad indictment of Spanish-speaking news media in this country. And if any other representative were to say that, it's insane. But it's even worse when you consider that she's the chair of one of the subcommittees on Western Hemispheric Affairs. Now, we don't have to go through the whole history of the U.S. invasion of Panama. In fact, we did a fantastic show last year with Egberto, along with friend of the show Michael Fox, on the U.S. invasion of Panama. But Egberto, I'm curious to get your thoughts on what she just said here.
She doesn't know what she's talking about. First of all, the Americans were never welcomed into Panama for the invasion. Secondly, the only information they have out of Panama as far as they're concerned is what the military told them, which was nothing but a conglomerate of lies. I mean, these guys, because our guy, Pina, cara de Pina, because you see, that's how we know him, Cara de Piña.
Yeah.
Because Cara de Piña did not do what Bush wanted him to do, they came in to take out one guy. And for that one guy, we killed thousands of Panamanians. I don't see how you use that as an example when the rest of the world saw that for exactly what it was, the systemic murder of Panamanians to get one guy and to really overthrow the government. It is shameful that she would bring that up. And I tell you what, Venezuela will be no different than Panama. The only difference I see is that while the Panamanians didn't have a force to really fight them, Venezuela does.
Arturo, I want to get your thoughts on this because people can't see us because we're on the radio, but I'm curious to get your opinion on this distortion of history.
Yeah, I mean, Egberto nailed it. Like, you know, he knows the history better than we do. He was there. But I've heard this. People bring up name one country where, you know, U.S. interventionism was successful. And a lot of people mention Panama. And I'm like, that just goes to show how little people really know about what happened in Panama. You know, and to touch on what Egberto said at the end, this whole idea that they think they're just going to walk into Venezuela and take it. Like, she's trying to convince people that 80% of Venezuelans support, you know, Machado and Edmundo Gonzalez. And you guys already know that I have issues with that data the opposition provided.
You wrote a lot about that.
Right. And that's because there's a lot of fraudulent looking stuff in there. And it leaves me to believe, I can't say Maduro won the election, but I can't say he lost it either. I can't say they won because their data is really corrupted. A lot of, you know, forged signatures, none of the tally sheets have been certified, so they can't be validated. There's a lot of issues with that stuff. So at this point, I still don't know who won that election, but it's kind of irrelevant because had they really won that election, they wouldn't have had to provide busted looking data. 80%, there's no way. Ask any Venezuelan and they'll tell you that the only people who support, and they use only a lot, the only people who support Maduro are like the black Venezuelans, indigenous Venezuelans, and the poor, right? But those same people will tell you 80 to 90% of Venezuela's poor. I'm not going to say 80 to 90% of Venezuela supports Maduro, but the latest poll, which came from the Venezuelan legislature, so take this with a, whatever grain of salt you want. They're saying that Maduro right now has 73% approval rating over how he is dealing with the United States.
Compare that to Trump.
And right. Again, and that seems more believable to me, but I will put the actual number, just an educated guess, somewhere in between 20 to, you know, under 50%, but probably close to 50% approval rating for Maduro right now. There are a lot of armed militias in the jungles and in the mountains in Venezuela. A lot of them are pro-Maduro. A lot of them are opposition-type forces. In the last election, there was 10 candidates. More than half of them were opposition to Maduro. 9 of the 10 candidates validated Maduro's results in the election. The only ones that didn't were Machado and Gonzalez. Gonzalez, you know, backed away from the data that was provided. I wasn't the one who uploaded it. So there's a lot of suspicion there. This idea, again, that 80% of the population supports a woman that's just so broadly hated because she's far right. And she wants to, the last coup that she was involved in, when they tried to coup Chavez in 02, they immediately threw out the Constitution, and the Constitution has protections for indigenous people and black people in there.
Yes, we did an entire show on the absurdity of Maria Corina Machado getting the Nobel Prize a few weeks ago. And I didn't want to make this the Maria Elvira Salazar show here with all these clips, but she did mention Machado in those outrageous statements about a 100-day plan, quote unquote, following regime change. And so that tells you more with regards to how much she's hated in Venezuela and how right-wing and how aligned she is with this current Trump administration. And this leads us now to, I guess at this point, the footage that we've all seen by now of U.S. airstrikes on Venezuelan boats. The Trump administration claims to be drug boats despite presenting no evidence. Here's Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth last week at the Ronald Reagan Defense Forum, of all places, defending these strikes on these boats. Let's take a listen.
Right now, the world is seeing the strength of American resolve in stemming the flow of lethal drugs to our country. These narco-terrorists are the Al-Qaeda of our hemisphere, and we are hunting them with the same sophistication and precision that we hunted Al-Qaeda. We are tracking them, we are killing them, and we will keep killing them so long as they are poisoning our people with narcotics so lethal that they're tantamount to chemical weapons.
So again, that was Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth justifying actions off the coast of Venezuela. So Arturo, we started this conversation saying if the playbook of Iraq in 2003 is being repeated, certainly the rhetoric is being repeated. And you have an article in your Substack page discussing the criminality of what's taking place off the coast of Venezuela. I wonder if you could tell us more as it pertains to your article.
Well, you know, obviously striking boats like that, unarmed boats, is a war crime. The double tap thing that the media keeps talking about, They're saying that the double tap thing is a war crime. The reality is they're all war crimes, right? You're killing people without due process. They're not armed. They're not an immediate threat to any military vehicle, boats, anything. You know, those boats are not big enough to make it to the United States. You know, they're island hopping. They leave the coast of South America. They hit a Caribbean island somewhere, and God only knows what happens from there. But there's no way that boat is making an 1,800-mile trip across the Gulf. If you've ever been deep sea fishing, you would know that. That is not that kind of boat. You know, the submarines they seize and all this stuff, same thing. Those things cannot make that trip. These are like made in somebody's garage type boats, you know, like the submarines and stuff. They're not, you know, engineered or anything like that. Yeah, and you hear them bragging about the Coast Guard interdicting boats and seizing the drugs and bringing the guys into custody and throwing them in a federal prison, and they still do that. And that's the legal process for this. You know, distributing drugs is not a war crime. It's not a crime punishable by death. The implications that they're suggesting that these guys are the equivalent to Al-Qaeda, come on. Are they suicide bombing anything? I mean, are they threatening to blow up your house? They're not anywhere close to the United States. Like, it's ridiculous, you know, and it just speaks to the outright incompetence of this administration. it makes them so dangerous. You know, Hegseth was kicked out of the military. He's nowhere near qualified to have the job that he has. And it's clear to me by now, and I've been trying to find this out ever since he said in February when he was at Stuttgart, Germany at AFRICOM, he said he was seeking unilateral authority to conduct drone strikes. Something has never been done before because that's solely a power reserved for the president. Obama got grief about potentially letting generals do drone strikes without his approval. Trump and his first administration didn't touch it. Biden didn't touch it. It all had to be done by the president. This time around, you hear the media saying, everybody's saying, even Hegseth is saying, he ordered these strikes. That tells me that he got the power he was seeking in February to conduct drone strikes. And when you consider the amount of power that the U.S. military has at the border, and they designated so-and-so cartels as terrorists, before you know it, and in February I said we're a long way from drone strikes against immigrants at the border. We're not so far away from that now. We are not far away from that now. They say that they knew for a fact that these people on these boats were members of a cartel. So why not take them out of the water? Why not pick them up? Why not throw them in a prison? And why not negotiate with them to get more information? You're blowing these people up. You have no evidence that there's drugs because you destroyed everything. It reeks of outright criminality. These are war crimes happening right here in our front yard in the Caribbean. And it's just astounding to me that they think they can get away with it like that.
And even if we were to take it away from the context of war, it's just plain old murder.
Right.
Plain and simple, you know, recorded on video as well. So, Egberto, I want to get your thoughts on what we've seen with these airstrikes. And again, what we see clearly with our own naked eyes, the idea that whether it be one boat or a dozen boats of these same size, of these same capacities, who has the idea that those little boats can push tons upon tons of drugs as it's being claimed by the Trump administration? It's just ridiculous.
On the face of it, you can actually see that it's a complete lie what they're doing. And the other thing is, why the hell would you need the largest aircraft carrier in the Caribbean to interject drugs? But, you know, I wish the media would take this to the other level, supply versus demand. I mean, come on, we're a capitalist country. Whenever there's a demand, somebody's going to provide the supply. If you want to go ahead and solve the drug problems, instead of spending billions on aircraft carriers and all these things, why is nobody in the media bringing up, why don't we stop the drug problem by making sure people are not in pain, who are on drugs, who need the drugs that are coming in? Why are we just bombing stuff as China is building South America, Central America, the Caribbean? I mean, nobody that I find in the media are taking one level of indirection to say, wait a minute, let's get people to start critically thinking so that they won't believe what Hegseth is saying about maximal lethality is why we're doing this and we want to stop all these drugs from coming over here. That is not the issue. And, you know, I'm glad that Arturo said, we understand what the issue is, but let's take it to the other level and make the American people understand that the issue isn't about blowing up these boats. It's a lot deeper than that.
A couple of weeks ago here on the show, we did an episode on this horrendous police massacre that took place in Brazil that left hundreds of people dead. And one of the issues that was discussed in that conversation was the militarization, over-militarization, remilitarization of local police in Brazil. And one of the things that I argued in that story was that it is a lot easier to shoot a gun than it is to teach a child how to read or to give somebody medicine. And here in this case, in this conversation that we're having right now, it's easier to shoot a bomb from a drone on a boat than it is to treat the socioeconomic conditions that lead people to drug use. Because as we said at the beginning of the show, this is not about drugs. This is about oil and only oil. And so We're going to take a break right here. We're speaking with Egberto Willis, the host of Politics Done Right, which airs on Pacifica Station KPFT in Houston, Texas, and freelance writer Arturo Dominguez as well. This is the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Occupied Washington. We're going to take a quick break right here. Back with more in a minute. Stay tuned.
Police and thieves in the street, fighting the nation with their guns and ammunition. Police and thieves in the street.
To the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Occupied Washington. Reminding everyone that you also follow us on latinomediacollective.com. You can find us on Twitter under the name at @LMC_show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez, and we're speaking about the hypocrisy on drugs with Egberto Willis, who's the host of Politics Done Right, which airs on Pacifica Station KPFT in Houston, Texas, and Arturo Dominguez, who's a freelance writer also based in Houston, Texas. So while all these actions against Venezuela are being presented by the Trump administration as a quote-unquote war on drugs, the same administration has pardoned former Honduran coup leader Juan Orlando Hernandez, despite being in prison for 45 years for trafficking hundreds of tons of cocaine into the United States. And to summarize, here's Virginia Senator Tim Kaine briefly summarizing the hypocrisy of pardoning Hernandez.
President Trump is claiming to be taking action to stop the flow of narcotics into the United States. Yet these two outrageous pardons show that he is willing to excuse and free the worst narco traffickers in the world. How does this protect Americans from the flow of narcotics entering our country? I can tell you that the decision with respect to ex-President Hernandez will severely tarnish our reputation with our regional friends and allies. Pardoning him sends a message of impunity to those involved in drug trafficking, violent crime, and corruption, which are often clear causes of irregular migration to the United States. Why pardon a crook who successfully shoved 400 tons of cocaine right up the nose of the gringos? Why pardon a criminal who established the largest underground illegal drug market in the world. How come President Trump is willing to ignore the American juries who looked at the overwhelming evidence against these narco traffickers and convicted them? It's hard to see any reason for these pardons except that Hernandez and Ulbricht are mega rich. Their bank accounts are stuffed with millions from illegal activities, which gives them the means and the motive to pump large sums of money into downtown D.C. to get out of jail.
So again, that was Virginia Senator Tim Kaine giving a coherent summarization of what just took place with regards to the pardoning of Juan Orlando Hernandez. And here is Donald Trump sort of saying, well, take a listen.
You also pardoned the former president of Honduras, and he was released from prison yesterday.
Well, he was the president, and they had some drugs being sold in their country, and because he was the president, they went after him. That was a Biden horrible witch hunt, which was, you know, a lot of people in Honduras asked me to do that, and I did it. I feel very good about it. If you have some drug dealers in your country and you're the president, you don't necessarily put the president in jail for 45 years. That was a Biden-inspired witch hunt.
You know what? This is one of those shows where I feel like I wish I was on YouTube so I could get everyone's reactions and show it to everyone, because again, we went from the coherence of Tim Kaine to the incoherence of Donald Trump there. So, Egberto, what are your thoughts on this pardon of someone proven in a U.S. court of drug trafficking when compared to the accusations against Nicolas Maduro, whether there's evidence or not? I mean, again, it's just stunning that this took place in the last couple of weeks.
Oscar, think about this. I mean, this guy talked about filling up the veins of the gringos with coke. You never heard anything like that out of Maduro, right? I want to digress a little bit because of something that I said before, and I want to kind of give it some context to answer your question. And that is, when I said, why aren't we solving the problem at home so we don't have to bomb, etc., I needed to give that context with what both you and Arturo said, and that is, the reality is that the military is down there not to solve any drug problem at all. Their ulterior motives, as you said, the oil. So therefore, why would they worry about, you know, solving the problem here or doing some other method? It doesn't make any sense if it's really for the oil, right? Now, that brings us into Juan. When Juan was pardoned, you had to ask yourself, if you're trying to interject in Venezuela, why soon thereafter would you pardon Juan Hernandez? Why? Why would you do that given the optics? And then at that point, you have to just start to think about, as we are upset about this, the whole infrastructure from our media to our population is sick. Because think about one pardoning a drug dealer moving tons of drugs, and that we don't have a revolt in how people are reporting it or people are seeing it or perceiving it, that you don't have a revolt from the media that says, wait a minute, what's going on here? I sit down sometimes and think I'm on some sort of a fatal comedy show, because I can't believe, and sorry for not giving a very coherent answer, but I simply can't believe that this is happening, that this is reality, and that the man gets away with it without suffering any real consequences. Think about Iran Contra. Iran Contra, they were in Reagan's skin every day, every night, 24/7. Donald Trump says, oh, you know, it was the people that worked for him that were the drugs. He shouldn't have to pay the penalty for that. So Durenz asked me to release him, and I did. And you and I and Arturo speak about it, and the media, it goes over their head. I don't know. This is some sort of a dystopian reality.
Let's not forget that I think several people from Iran-Contra got pardoned years later. So Arturo, I want your response as well to this incredible hypocrisy, as Egberto just mentioned, of accusing Maduro or anyone else for that matter of drug trafficking when he pardons a known drug trafficker convicted and proven in a U.S. court.
Yeah, you know, Hernandez was a notorious, like, I mean, he was if Escobar became president kind of guy, you know, he's responsible for a lot. But to touch on one thing Egberto kind of touched on, you know, you go back to Iran-Contra, right? You go back even further to the Vietnam War. And, you know, we smuggled heroin out of Indochina into Vietnam and fed it to our soldiers. We smuggled it into the United States, causing the heroin epidemic, right? Which eventually Nixon created the war on drugs to go after heroin, right? The whole thing feels like a setup. Then you have, you know, the crack epidemic, you know, tied to Iran-Contra. Then you have, you know, all these different smuggling operations where the CIA was involved. You know, there was a case in the early 2000s or late 90s where Venezuela interdicted a huge cocaine shipment. And for whatever reason, whenever these huge shipments are interdicted, they turn them over to the United States. Go figure, right? Instead of just destroying them. The CIA gets a hold of that shipment. And weeks later, two CIA agents are caught at the Miami International Airport smuggling that same cocaine from Venezuela into the United States. They could have given it to the DEA, put it on a DEA plane and flown it in here, but the CIA chose to smuggle it. Okay, then there's the DEA agent who was killed in Mexico in the 90s. The reason why essentially they got away with it was because the cartel leader who killed him, the CIA was using that dude's farm to funnel weapons into Nicaragua for the Contras. So this guy kills a DEA agent who stumbled onto his marijuana operation, and the CIA helped cover this up because they were helping the Contras and they needed this guy's ranch to ship weapons. That doesn't come out till like 10 years later. And the whole time, nobody gets in any trouble. The two agents who got caught smuggling the cocaine in Miami International Airport, one resigned and the other one was reassigned. And the only thing the CIA said was, you know, we had two agents who basically didn't use their better judgment. So to me, when you pardon a guy like this and you see like Hernandez and you see what the U.S. is doing, it's not about stopping drug control. It's about controlling the drug trafficking market. This is how the CIA has historically funded electoral coups, violent coups, destabilization efforts. It's all been done with drugs, whether it was Afghanistan, you know, when the Russian invasion happened, and this last time that we were there for 20 years, you know, to Iran, to everywhere. The CIA uses money obtained from the drug industry because otherwise it would have to be allocated through Congress, which would make it more public and then subject to debate. And nobody would give them that money to overthrow governments like that. So what I see, you know, it's not something that you can just outright prove this is what they're doing, but simple pattern recognition kind of tells you that this is kind of what's going on right now. And, you know, the CIA no longer has the access in Afghanistan that it had a couple of years ago. You know, you look at the U.S. military operating out of Colombia, right? We are in 8 Colombian bases. We've been there for over a decade, 15 years. In that time, we're there to help stop drug trafficking. In that time, cocaine coming out of Colombia has tripled. We didn't do anything to stop it. We're bolstering it. And like, how do you put billions of dollars in military assets, drones, surveillance, intelligence, all this stuff in a country where most of the cocaine is made and you've done nothing to put a dent and it only increases? I mean, sometimes it's as simple as putting two and two together. And it's just, this whole thing screams of farce in like so many different ways. You know, it benefits Trump because it takes the attention off his stuff. It benefits oil companies and corporate interests to invade Venezuela. It benefits the CIA and the drug trafficking networks and, you know, his chosen drug traffickers, not these guys, you know. So I feel like all of it is about control. It's about controlling Venezuela. It's about controlling the drug trade. And it's about controlling Latin America, you know. When you think about it, if the United States had control of Cuba and Venezuela, they could shut off the Gulf of Mexico to the rest of the world. They could starve out Latin America at the drop of a hat if they had Cuba and Venezuela. That's it. It's a strategic choke point. This is about control of the hemisphere. On December 2nd, Trump issued his own corollary to the Monroe Doctrine. It's kind of funny because when Monroe issued the Monroe Doctrine, he did it in congressional speech, right? The Roosevelt Corollary was done over 2 years, congressional speeches. A lot of effort was put into those things. Donald Trump posted a 350-word blurb on the White House website. That's his corollary. I published something this morning or today, this afternoon. It'll be out in the morning about his corollary. And it essentially lays out, you know, the foreign policy initiative for Latin America. And it's to control everything. It's to seek dominion over everything.
I hate to bring up Salazar again, but I think she did evoke the Monroe Doctrine in that interview that I played earlier. Egberto, you know what, considering the issue of destabilization, as Arturo just described it, especially when it comes to the issue of Iran-Contra from several decades ago, I mean, from one Central American to another, even if Juan Orlando Hernandez wasn't a drug trafficker, his authoritarian rule in Honduras led to a huge mass exodus of Hondurans fleeing the country and going to various parts of the country here, like Washington, D.C. and Houston, Texas, just to name a few places. Mm-hmm. And it just goes to show you that here, the theme of the show is hypocrisy on drugs. All these things, the Iran-Contra scandal, going after Noriega because of drugs, quote unquote, it leads to not only the destabilization, but the exodus, the mass exodus of people fleeing because of this destabilization. And it's important to point out, because for all the bluster that we're seeing about getting rid of migrants and ICE and all the headlines that we've seen in relation to ICE, I mean, people in this administration expect us, people like you and I, not to connect two and two together when it comes to destabilization and the forced migration that leads people to come to places like the United States.
Oscar, you are so right. And, you know, it's something that I speak about all of the time. Because, you know, as we're on the radio, we have all those right-wing callers that come in. And we want America for America and all these foreigners that are coming in. And what I've always pointed out is that you name from Haiti and what Clinton did with rice to what the fruit companies did throughout Guatemala, Honduras, all these places. One of the reasons that people are coming here is what we have done economically throughout these countries. Not only economically, to some extent, violently. And we are responsible for the migration that's coming here, not only from Central America, but from Haiti with the policies that we put out there. So, I mean, I think, again, you bringing that up, I think it is important that we bring these subjects up. The United States destabilizes wherever it goes. In fact, I think I could ask the question, what country have we ever entered into that came out stable as we exited? We live Iraq, a mess, Afghanistan, a mess, Panama. At the time, in as much as it's a sort of a democracy now, we left it a mess after we invaded. We left the Dominican Republic a mess. Every place that we've gone through, because the reality is we've never gone through there to fix anything for the people. We've always gone there to extract something. So you mentioned earlier when the reporter spoke, she never, or the congresswoman, I think it was, she never mentioned Venezuela until she ran out of breath. And then she said, and Venezuela.
Exactly. So at this point, I don't want to leave Secretary of State Marco Rubio off the hook here, because Arturo, earlier this year, we dedicated an entire show on Marco Rubio and how he serves as a Latino vessel to Donald Trump's white nationalist agenda in Latin America. So to what degree of influence or responsibility does he have both on Venezuela and Honduras? Probably not so much Honduras, not because he hasn't had any involvement there, but because he has intentionally avoided the current president, Xiomara Castro, during his tenure this year. But with Venezuela, even when he was a senator, he pretty much gave the same bluster and exaggerations and nonsense that we heard from Salazar earlier in the conversation. But we can't let him off the hook here.
No, no, we really can't. And just to touch on something real quick, in Latin America, when they hear Maria Elvira Salazar or Marco Rubio, right, both Cubans, trying to be hardliners about a country other than Cuba, They're like, who the hell are these Cubans talking about us, talking to us? Like, what do you know about here? So I just want to say that because in my reporting on Honduras lately with the whole meddling in the election, a lot of Hondurans are like, man, tell your Cuban friend to shut up. I'm like, she's not my friend, bro. I don't know her. But it's funny because and a lot of people in Latin America don't take them seriously. But Rubio, yeah, like when we talked about on that show last time, you know, he was fumbling his way through Latin America. You know, he was trying to avoid the issue of Cuba, but in the Caribbean, everybody was on him about Cuba because that's their neighbors, right? A lot of countries support Cuba despite what the U.S. says. And, you know, about the only place he really had any kind of success was in his little, I don't know, I call it romantic experience with Nayib Bukele, because the pictures they posted on social media were, I don't know, pretty, you know. Anyway.
I know which one you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Rubio is extremely problematic. You know, I remember during his confirmation hearing, Cory Booker was all, you know, giddy about Rubio because of his experience in foreign affairs and all these things. And really, the only experience Rubio has in foreign affairs is talking trash. He's never proposed anything that was ever really successful or useful in any way. And his rhetoric, a lot of it is pretty baseless, you know, like the stuff about Venezuela and things like that.
Yeah, remember when we had this conversation, he was sanctioning countries in the Caribbean that had Cuban doctors in their respective countries. And there was a press conference where even the Jamaican prime minister, I believe it was, sort of said the same thing that you just said, is like, who's this Cuban talking about us in our own affairs? Like something.
Yeah, he was
to that extent.
I know, you know, he went pretty far in calling these people human traffickers. We're talking about leaders of countries that he was referring to as human traffickers. And I noticed that, you know, he didn't mention any Western countries that have used Cuban doctors. You know, during COVID, Cuban doctors were in Italy, were in France. They were all over the place. 30-something thousand Cubans in 20-something countries were helping during COVID. Meanwhile, the United States was isolating Venezuela and Cuba from accessing COVID vaccines, from getting medical equipment, from getting basic medicine like ibuprofen. And that was intentional. You know, these are these hardline policies that transcend presidents, right? It goes from Trump to Biden, then back to Trump, you know, and the only blessing we've ever had as far as Cuba goes in the last 65 years was Obama, right?
That was a different kind of war on drugs.
Yeah, yeah, right. And then, you know, but Rubio, I mean, it's hard to really pin this guy down. I don't know how he can go to work for a guy who insulted him so badly in public. And then he sits in the White House in these pressers and he just grovels and just, for lack of a better term, he's just kissing Trump's ass, right? And it's just like, where's your pride, man? Where's your dignity? Like, I assure you, Donald Trump talks smack about it behind his back, probably still to his face, you know, and he takes it. And I just don't understand it. There's no dignity there. There's no dignity in attacking.
Like Ted Cruz. Huh? Like Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz was doing it recently, too. And these guys, I don't know where the dignity is in attacking your own people, Latinos more generally and Cubans more directly, and then groveling to a white man that hates them, no matter how white they are. Like, right. No matter how white I look, man, I'm telling you, but white people will tell me I'm not white. And, you know, that's the same thing with Rubio. You know, we right. all know that Stephen Miller doesn't like him. He doesn't like to work with Rubio. And we all know why that is. We all know why. Because he's working with a Latino and he doesn't like it. And that's all there is to it.
There's no honor among thieves. So no, we have about a few minutes left here. And so I want to give Egberto the last word here. We don't know what's going to happen in the next coming weeks or months ahead with regards to Venezuela. Hopefully the worst doesn't happen and that this bluster that we're seeing right now is just that, bluster. By no means whatsoever do we hope to see a repetition of what we saw in Iraq or what we saw in Panama several years ago. But again, we have to make it clear to everyone that this is not about a war on drugs. This is about oil. And so I want to give Egberto the last word because I would love for you to reiterate what you said earlier, which is that any type of intervention, whether it be Panama or Iraq, is going to end in failure and destruction and destabilization that lead people to migrate. So I'll give you the last word here.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. First of all, I was surprised that when you spoke about Rubio, you forgot to mention that he came to Panama and was with our President Molina because they were upset that the Chinese were responsible for several ports in Panama, and they just couldn't have that the Chinese, instead of bringing bombs, they brought infrastructure. That's the first thing. I was waiting for Arturo to say Panama. But the second thing is that when it comes to Venezuela, I think Trump is scared. I think he really thought by bringing the carrier and the planes, just, I think Arturo alluded to that before. I think he thought that Maduro would have caved and that it would have given the impetus for any revolutionary military in Venezuela to go ahead and try to overthrow the government. Arturo nailed it. And that was, wait a minute, there is more support from Maduro than most people believe. Otherwise, the military with the United States on the outside with an aircraft carrier would have intervened. So I think for the short term, I think there's no intervention. It is all bluster. But again, back to what you asked, Senor Oscar, is that, yes, they leave the place a mess. But if we really want to have an impact, in my opinion, we have to start changing the narrative and the conversation. Everybody wants us to talk about the ships being hit and that it's a drug thing. And Americans, if you tell an American, we're trying to interject the drug trade, they're going to go for it. But if we give the proper narrative and start to say, isn't it a lot less expensive to treat our people that are ill or people that are on drugs than having an aircraft carrier out there killing people, etc.? I think we have to direct the narrative somewhere else because the mainstream media sure as hell is not doing it.
We also have to give credit to the audience as well. During that time period around 2002, 2003, there was a large anti-war movement that was not buying what the Bush administration was selling. A lot has changed since then. The modern means of communication has changed, and the number of people that are not buying what this administration is selling has grown significantly larger than before. And so wise words from our guest today, Egberto Willis, who's the host of Politics Done Right, which airs on Pacifica Station, KPFD, in Houston, Texas. He also has a YouTube channel of the same name. It's always fun. It's always enlightening. Thank you very much for being on the show with us, Egberto Willis.
It has been my honor to be with you, Oscar. Every time I come on, I enjoy.
Absolutely. And we've also been joined by Arturo Dominguez, who's a freelance writer based in Houston, Texas. We're going to have a lot more conversations like these, Arturo. So thanks again for being on the show with us.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. This was a really good one. I think it was a much needed discussion.
And, you know, having me on with Arturo, I mean, that is like icing on the cake.
There you go. Yep.
It's a winning combination. So with that said, that is it for today's show. I want to remind everyone, you can follow us on latinomediacollective.com. You can also follow us on Twitter under the name @LMC_show. And of course, live on WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. Once again, this is Oscar Fernandez saying thank you very much, everyone, for listening to the show. That's it for today's show. Adios. Nos vemos. Ciao.
For WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin. Today is Friday, December 12th. Here are some headlines. At least 14 Palestinians have died in Gaza in the last 24 hours as torrential rains, high winds, and flash floods batter the territory. Among the dead are three children who died from hypothermia. A fierce winter storm threatens hundreds of thousands of displaced Palestinians, many living in tents. Forecasters are predicting the storm will continue through the weekend. One Palestinian told Al Jazeera, quote, The tents are gone. The clothes are gone. Our food is gone. Close quote. According to the United Nations, more than 760 displacement sites housing 850,000 people face imminent flood risk. Aid groups say the risk is even higher as Israel continues to block the entry of essential supplies. Save the Children has called on Israel to allow tents, winter clothes, and blankets to enter Gaza to help protect families from the storm. In related news, UNICEF this week said, despite a ceasefire announced 2 months ago, child malnutrition in Gaza remains at crisis levels. UNICEF reported that over 9,000 children were hospitalized for severe acute malnutrition in October, alongside more than 8,000 malnourished pregnant and breastfeeding women. UNICEF spokesperson Tess Ingram warns that the effects will last for years, and a surge in low birth weight babies is expected in the coming months. In more news, a federal judge yesterday ordered the immediate release of Kilmar Abrego Garcia after ICE accused him of gang activity. The El Salvadoran national was first deported by the U.S. in March and sent to the notorious CECOT mega prison, despite a ruling that being deported to his home country is illegal. Since Garcia's return from wrongful detention in El Salvador, he has been re-detained and threatened with deportation to numerous African countries. The court found that once again ICE acted without lawful authority. Quote, for this reason, the court will grant Abrego Garcia's petition for immediate release from ICE custody. Close quote. In other news, Indiana Republicans rejected an effort to redraw the state's congressional map yesterday, with 21 Republicans joining 10 Democrats in rejecting the new map. The new map would have reconfigured the state's congressional districts to add two more Republican-friendly seats in the 2026 midterm elections. Democrats said it would have diluted the voting power of non-white voters. The vote marks the first time Trump's redistricting campaign has been voted down by members of his own party. And the Senate yesterday rejected efforts to extend Affordable Care Act tax credits, essentially guaranteeing insurance costs for an estimated 20 million Americans will go up starting January 1st. Senate Republicans blocked the Democrats' effort to extend the expiring subsidies. Four Republicans backed the Democratic plan, but that was not enough to clear the threshold needed to overcome a filibuster. Democrats likewise thwarted a Republican proposal to replace the subsidies with an expansion of health savings accounts and direct payments to people who buy the most basic plans. Democrats argued the GOP plan did nothing to address health care premiums and opposed restrictions in the bill on abortion and gender-affirming care. For WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin.